Hey, it's Meatball.
And Mark.
And this is the Rocker Morning Show on demand from 107.7 RKR.
Hey, how's it going, Ian?
All right, thanks. And yourself?
I'm doing well, man. How's the morning going for you so far?
Oh, so far, so good. Yeah.
Awesome. First off, congratulations on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a cool thing to do.
How was that night, you know, being able to unite with present and past members of the band?
It was great to see everybody there. You know, it's a pity that that Dave couldn't be there. You know, he sadly passed away some years ago now.
Yeah.
But everybody who was on stage, you know, they all deserved their place, and it was a great night to get everyone together. You know.
Yeah. Was it pretty simple stepping back in with like the former members? Was it just kind of like clockwork again when you guys were practicing?
Well, yeah. I mean, Ken's got his own band as well now, so he's probably playing the same tunes.
Yeah, true.
So he's well drilled with them, you know. Maybe Les, he might have had to put an hour or two practicing, you know. But they're simple songs. They're iconic songs, you know. They're songs everybody knows. So it was pretty straightforward to get it together. You know, everybody knew what they were supposed to do.
Yeah, for sure. Now, the new album, Invisible Shield, that came out a few weeks ago. And again, man, I'm so impressed with the way that your band can continue to put out legitimately great albums. How was the experience making this album?
Well, it was a bit convoluted, really. I mean, the album should have come out really before COVID.
Yeah.
The album, the writing process started immediately after Firepower. And then on came COVID, you know, and half the band lived in America, half of us were in Britain, and we weren't allowed to see each other, you know, for a long time there. Mm-hmm. So it was a long, protracted process, really. Everybody had to be done sort of individually. Andy was the brave one who was traveling backwards and forwards and doing all that. It came to pass. I mean, COVID finished, you know, and we were straight into the 50th anniversary tour, you know. So we had to wait another year, you know, before we could release it. But it got to the point where we were trying to save as much time, you know, the time that we got left. So I ended up doing bass lines in hotel rooms on the last European tour, which is easy to do these days. Well, not easy. Nothing's easy, but it was straightforward, you know.
Yeah.
Andy had got his laptop with him, all the files he got, you know, in his case. So I just carried a bass along with me, plugged it into the computer and went like that, you know. And it was great, a great way to do it. It really was. And pressure's off. You haven't got another five pairs of eyes looking at you. Come on, it's my turn. Get out of the way, you know. Listen. So, yeah, it was a good way to do it. Not to say we'll do it again, but it's easier than you might imagine. So.
That's great. Now, I was very excited when you guys came to the Wings Event Center for that 50th anniversary and in Kalamazoo. And did that show in 2022 kind of prompt you guys to want to come back to the Wings Event Center? Because before that, it'd been quite a while since you had been to Kalamazoo. But man, that I just feel like that show, the entire arena was just pure energy.
Yeah, you're right. We hadn't been there for a while, had we? You know, I don't know why. You know, we're sort of slaves to whoever's putting the tenders in or whatever, you know. It's just our agent that sorts all that out. So it's nothing from our side, you know. But yeah, I mean, it was a great night. And we're just too pleased to go back there, you know. And we're looking forward to it. What is it, about 3-4 days' time now, something like that?
Yeah, Saturday night. It's going to be wild. So, and it's going to be a fun one, too, because I love how you guys will, you know, obviously you play. You've got so many songs that people love from you guys to hear live. But you always seem to kind of bust out one or two gems, a couple of deep cuts. And obviously, you know, we're hearing songs like Love Bites and, you know, Saints and L. And I'm, you know, how is it coming up with a set list when you've got such a massive catalog of music?
Well, I don't know. It gets more difficult with each album, you know, because for every new one you put in, you've got to drop potentially somebody's favorite, you know. So does get difficult. But you've got the, you know, the core songs, which are ring fence, really, the songs that you can't drop. And we build a set around that. New songs, very rarely do you have any more than about three, four at a real push, you know. Because mm-hmm. Yeah, you're having to make way for it, and the deep cuts as well. So you're dropping another familiar song for a deep cut, you know. And it does get more difficult. But we have a load of songs that we can chop and change, you know, without too much drama, and we try and do as much as that as we can, just to keep this, you know, the set list fresh, and maybe a surprise or two. We've been here now for about 2 weeks, give or take. So it might be time to swap one or two of the songs, you know, which we can use easy enough to do. We have rehearsal facilities at the gig. But yeah, it's difficult, you know, it's difficult. But you know, I think we do our best to get a blend of old, new, and unfamiliar, as well as the popular, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you've been in Priest pretty much since the beginning. Not a lot of people are aware of this. Judas Priest, as we know it, actually didn't start with you and KK. You guys had a project together, and eventually it became Priest, but it was originally like a completely different set of members, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. You're talking about 1968-69. They had a few mishaps along the way. I know one of the guitarists sadly died in a car accident.
Oh, right.
But the trademark lineup of the early band was Alan Atkins on vocals, Ernie Chataway on guitar, Bruno Stapenhill on bass, and John Partridge on drums. And they were together for the same time as Ken and myself, and a drummer called John Ellis, who was another school chum. But we were just meeting up at a local rehearsal place, you know, saving our pennies. And just learning the trade, basically. We were learning how to play as we were going along. In the meantime, the original Judas Priest had split up for one reason or another. Sometime later, probably early, it must have been 1970, probably, I don't know, summertime, 1970, something like that, Al Atkins from the original band walked past our rehearsal room and liked what he heard, you know, came and asked if we needed a vocalist, which we did.
Yeah.
And went from there. We spent the rest of the year just rehearsing, you know, getting set lists together, which was only one or two original songs. We were playing other songs, you know, by the popular bands of the day, you know, Hendrix songs, Cream songs, Fleetwood Mac, so, you know, stuff like that. A band called Quatermass that no one's ever heard of. We did quite a few of their songs, you know. And we started in early 1971. I think it was early March 1971, maybe, when we started playing. Essington Working Men's Club.
Oh, man, putting in the work. Now,
it was a start, yeah.
Now, when do you feel like Judas Priest as a band really found their vision of what they wanted to be musically? Because obviously Rock and Roll are quite a different album than, you know, something like Sad Wings of Destiny. When do you think, was there a particular album that kind of the writing process kind of made you realize, like, this is the kind of music that we would really like to put out there?
It was probably British Steel.
Yeah.
Because heavy metal didn't exist when we started. It was called heavy rock. Or right. Progressive rock, even, you know. And we went up all different avenues. You know, there was a bluesy type of thing, there was a rocky type of thing, there was a heavier thing, there was even the lighter and the more commercial sort of avenues you went up. I mean, but it probably wasn't until 78, 79, when somebody said, oh, yeah, they're a heavy metal band, you knew what to expect. And everything pretty much came together with British Steel in 1980. That was the music, you know, the direction of the music, and of course the image as well. We'd lost the satins and the velvet, and the flowers, you know, which is a hangover from the hippie days, you know. And we were into leather by then, you know, and it suited the music perfectly. It really did. Yeah. And that when we took the first real step on the direction, and that went right the way up really till All Defenders of the Faith, you know, that was a peak of that direction, if you know what I mean.
Right.
After that, we did the experimental Turbo album, which had mixed reviews. You know, it lost us a lot of fans, but gained us a lot of new ones. You know, and then we went with the harder edge with Ram It Down and Painkiller. You know, and that's we're following on from that now. You know,
right. with a lot of, you know, classic metal bands, there seems to be a lot of themes with every album. You mentioned the image. Is creatively, when you're making an album, do you start with the music and then kind of develop the concept, or do you have the concept in mind and try to write music around that?
There's no real concept. I think it all just falls into place. I mean, I'm not one of the writers. That's obviously, historically, it was Ken, Glenn and Rob. Lately, for the last few albums, it's been Richie Faulkner, you know. Mm-hmm. And they'll come up with musical ideas. Rob's always got lyrics. He's always writing lyrics, you know.
Right.
He's got a catalogue of those. Yeah, yeah, wonderful. You know, sort of left field lyrics that he writes. So the two guitarists get together, get the elements of the song, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Rob will put his lyrics to it, and when they have pretty much the rough song, the rough outline of the song, and that's where myself and Scott will get our copies of it, and he'll put his drum patterns, and I'll put my bass lines down to it. You know, so that's pretty much the writing process. And it's still like that today.
The band obviously saw some changes in the 90s. You guys were fortunate enough to find Tim Ripper Owens, who did a great job stepping in as vocalist. How was that transition of working with Rob to working with Tim?
It was pretty simple, really. I mean, we didn't really want another name, per se, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Because they'll always bring the baggage with them, and it really would change the band dramatically. Mm-hmm. And we didn't really want that, you know. We wanted to continue in the vein that we were in, so we wanted someone who could pretty much cover what we were already doing. And Ripper was an obvious choice; he had a tremendous voice, and he was actually playing in a Priest tribute band at the time, you know. So he knew most of the songs, which was a bonus. So you know, we went for Tim, and it was a pretty easy process. Tim's a great bloke, you know, easygoing fella. So it was an easy process, really, you know. But the problem was he wasn't Rob, and that's what people wanted. They wanted the trademark lineup. And in the end, where Rob started to hint that he wouldn't mind coming back and whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think Tim, he agreed, you know. He was a fan of the band as well,
right?
And he could see the point, you know. So even that was a comparatively, you know, smooth process as well when Rob came back.
And Tim was singing in a Judas Priest cover band, like, before he'd joined the band, correct? So he was, he was already familiar with, obviously, he was a big fan, but also really familiar with the sound of the band and how to perform those songs. But even, you know, like you said, a lot of people were like, oh, they wanted Rob, but you guys kept going forward. And, you know, the two albums that you put with Tim Ripper Owens really do have some great songs in there that, you know, I feel like people sometimes get a little bit too uppity in their concept of a band. Meanwhile, it's like, you guys know what it's like. You guys are the band, you know?
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, you're right. Those two albums have got some fine material on it, you know. Especially Demolition. I think Demolition was a fine album, you know.
Yeah.
But it was what it was, you know. And like I say, we weren't making a great deal of headway either, and neither was Rob, if you come to that, you know. And it was a good idea all round, you know, to get back together with Rob. It just made so much sense. The fans wanted it, and in the end, we wanted it, and even Ripper wanted it, you know. So it made a lot of sense, you know. And Rob came back. We stepped straight back to where we were, you know, at the Painkiller, and went off from there, you know.
I was going to say, you know, Tim did a great job, obviously, with Jugulator and Demolition, but it was interesting to me, because when I listen to those albums, I hear, you know, that last album that Rob was on, Painkiller, and then you transition, you know, years later into Angel of Retribution, and it really flowed. It really did sound like it was recorded in the same era. Like you said, it kind of picked up where it left off. Is that a matter of, like, Rob's influence on the music as frontman as well?
Yeah, no, I think it's just something that came naturally, you know. With each album, we try and take a step forward, you know. And, and of course, when Angel of Retribution came along, there was several years missing there.
Yeah.
So we had to sort of think, well, you know, sort of where were we? And it was a natural thing. It just came.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't really, it was nothing, you know, conscious. We've got to do this, you know.
Right.
It sort of happened. And yeah, Rob's influence, of course, you know. The same writing process as I just explained, that was straight back into place, you know.
Yeah.
And it just, like I said, it flowed and it felt correct.
Yeah.
Sort of almost natural, you know.
Now, for a lot of years, people have been asked, it was funny because we asked our audience, I said, you know, what should we talk to Ian about? Someone brought this up and I thought it was funny. For years, people have been asking for a mega tour with Judas Priest and Iron Maiden. Do you ever think that'll come to fruition, or would the fabric of reality just not be enough to handle that kind of show?
I'm sort of running out of time now, but, you know, it would be great. I agree. It'd be a phenomenal tour, and it's something that's been talked about perennially. It's been talked about for a long time. But the thing is, we're both very busy bands, you know, and just from a schedule point of view, you know, you're down tools at the end of a tour to what we're going to do, you know, and you think, okay, or I might, and they've just started a new record, you know, so in the studio, so you can't do that. And that's been a lot of it, I think. It's just basically from a pure schedule point of view. And like I say, it'd be a great idea. It would be a mega tour, you know. But yourself, you've got enough time left, who knows, you know.
Well, I mean, tonight you guys are in Rosemont, and it's gonna be a blast, man. You guys are gonna be here on Saturday, and I really hope everybody comes out and gets tickets to the show because it's gonna be awesome. Invisible Shield, obviously the new album. Very excited to see some of the new songs from this album played live. And man, I want to thank you for your time today, and really want to thank you for what you've done through your music. It's helped me out a ton, as well as many others. And we can't wait to see you in Kalamazoo on Saturday. It's been a pleasure talking to you, man.
Yeah, indeed. Same here, mate. Be safe and see you on Saturday.
Awesome, dude. You take care. Have a good show tonight. We'll see you Saturday.
Okay, so long. Bye-bye.